This is CNT Talk. Every week, two friends debate the issues of the ages as we agree to disagree. It's never politically correct, but it's always entertaining. Join us tonight so you can sound knowledgeable at work tomorrow. We're smacking you upside the head with the hammer of truth. Welcome to the show. Folks, hello, hello. It's been a couple weeks, I think a month.
Has it been a month?
I think it's been a month since we last recorded, yeah.
Wow.
You know, Christmas, New Year's, traveling, life intrudes. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's what it comes down to sometimes this time of year. But we're back. Nothing's happened. In the last month, absolutely nothing has happened except what we're going to talk about tonight. So if there's something else that happened, we're not aware of it.
It
doesn't matter too much. We do have a voicemail from a listener at the end. So stay tuned for that.
Excellent.
I always like to hear what they have to say for us. So this week, some things happened with Donald Trump. I know that's hard to believe, and I'm not even going to talk about the tweets he put out today, that he's genius smart, apparently.
Genius, but stable.
Stable genius. And that's where we come into what we're going to talk about here. So there is a physician from, I believe it's Yale.
Of course.
Psychiatrist physician, who talks about the mental state of Donald Trump. Okay. And there's a Amendment 25 challenge, possibly. So I want to play a clip.
It's not possibly. Don't even say possibly.
Well, it's possibly the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Yes. But let me play there's two clips here. We'll play one. Maybe we'll play the second one, depending on how the conversation goes, from Jake Tapper and Representative Jamie Raskin. So let me play that for you.
You and several of your Democratic House colleagues met with a psychiatry professor from Yale, Dr. Bandy Lee. She told CNN today, quote, as the president is unraveling, he seems to be losing his grip on reality and reverting to conspiracy theories. There are signs that he is going into attack mode when he is under stress. That means he has the potential to become impulsive and very volatile, unquote. Did she say that to the assembled Congress people?
That's Jake Tapper's.
Well, I think that Dr. Lee and other psychiatrists who've been up to meet with members of Congress have been predicting increasingly delusional and paranoid behavior on the part of the president. Of course, we're not mental health professionals. We're not psychiatrists.
That's not
our role. But we do have a very defined and important role under the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, which is to set up a body that could act with the vice president in the event of an emergency when the president becomes unable for mental or physical reasons to successfully discharge the powers and duties of office.
Sure.
So just to set that up, Amendment 25 talks about succession, but also talks about when a president is incapacitated. So that's what they're referring to here. Reagan signed over to G.W. Bush when he had surgery and then he was shot. This is not uncommon, but it's very uncommon for the sitting president to be profiled by a psychiatrist and then brief Congress without actually meeting with the president. Isn't that a little strange to you?
But again, this is just more of the Democrats having – it's ironic. Whatever he said there about delusional and paranoid doesn't apply to the president. Now, listen. They said the same thing. If you remember this. They said exactly the same thing about Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was going to be a madman. I love this. When he goes into attack mode. Let me ask you this, Chad. During World War II, when Winston Churchill said, you know, we're going to fight on the beaches, was he being impulsive and going into attack mode such that he should have been profiled and perhaps removed?
Hitler probably would have wished that would have happened,
right.
Yes.
I mean, they have been talking about this 25th Amendment nonsense from day one the presidency.
Is it paranoia when they're actually going after you? That's not paranoia. That's actually happening. They're attacking him every single day because his name's Donald Trump. Like him or hate him.
Well, and you can say he's a braggart. You can say he's an egomaniac. You can say that he is crude and a buffoon and he shouldn't be on Twitter and he says incendiary things and he's reckless in his speech and all of those things. Continue with your litany. It does not amount to a mental illness such that he's incapacitated. It is completely ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
And again, the more that these people... You know, first of all, the fact that Jake Tapper sits there
with a straight face
and sort of like these people have credit. Oh, you've been meeting with very important. It's like, oh, it's very concerning.
Did you notice Representative Raskin acted like there was other psychiatrists they've met with?
Well, I'm sure, you know what? I'm sure there are. And guess what? I bet they're all from Yale and Harvard and Berkeley and Stanford and
sure
Princeton. And guess what? They're not just psychiatrists.
They're
rabid left-wing Democrats who hate Donald Trump. So,
yeah. That's what the second clip talks about. He just says these are people have everybody just like their First Amendment rights to talk about what they see. Well, you haven't met with the president. You have no basis for your evaluation other than what you read on a tweet.
Well, and then they're going to have to also figure out, because this always gets back to the end game, which is when you get Donald Trump hustled off the stage in his straitjacket, Mike Pence takes over. Uh-huh. You're going to have to figure out why he's also crazy.
You come up with another reason.
Well, you know, he does only have dinner. He won't have dinner with women other than his wife. So I think that indicates he's on the advanced stages of dementia.
On an offshoot on that, NBC announced this week that they were no longer allowing staff members to share a cab.
Right.
Because of fear of this. Ironically, they're still in favor of sharing bathrooms.
Yes, that's right.
So, I don't know what that means, but it seems
also no more executives with the secret button that locks the office door
that the maintenance had to install for them, but didn't know what it was for. Anyway, Representative Raskin is insane if he thinks that this is somehow going to fly. That because he said you have to work with the vice president because the vice president has to willingly take over.
Yes.
And why would he take over if Donald Trump is not insane?
And
not
by the
liking
way,
is what he does
Donald
is not
Trump
insane.
Donald Trump is exactly the same guy that he's been for the last four decades.
At least.
As a man about town, billionaire, mm-hmm. real estate developer, television personality. Gee, no one ever suggested that he was losing his mind.
He wasn't in charge of the free world then. That's
right.
Why it matters now, obviously.
Right.
Now, if you go back to Obama in 2008, he thought he was more intelligent than his daily intelligence briefer. He thought he was more intelligent than his strategy people because he was president or going to be president. Donald Trump feels the same way. And I think it's the fact that you expect your president to have an ego. If you don't expect your president to have an ego, a la Calvin Coolidge possibly, that's not today. I expect my president to be an egotistical jerk most of the time because they got things to do. I'm sorry. If you don't like that, too bad.
It's a given that the way Donald Trump conducts himself with the tweeting and his bragging, fine. You don't have to like it. You can think it's terrible. I don't like it.
No, we don't like it at all, but that's okay.
If you want to ensure more Donald Trump, continue with this kind of – they want to talk about insanity? This is insanity. People listen to something like that who are not rabid partisans, and they say, huh – I don't actually like Donald Trump very much, but these people mm-hmm. are bonkers.
Yep.
These people are so marinated in their hatred and their partisanship that they're literally trying to come up with some way to remove Donald Trump by claiming he's nuts. I'm sorry. You lost the election.
Yeah.
It's over. So they're pivoting from, oh, it's Russia. Oh, looks like that's not going well. Well, let's go back to the 25th Amendment thing. Well, maybe there's a health issue. What was the other thing that they were? Oh, the emoluments clause. Remember all that stuff?
Yes.
You know, it's like they've got their little playbook of what are we on now?
Boom, boom.
What can we run to Matt? Listen, he's not going anywhere.
No, he's not.
You're stuck with him for 4 years at a minimum.
Yep.
Get used to it.
Get over it. So that goes us. Takes us into the book that was published this week about inside the White House. Okay, now I want to read a quote here. Is
this the quote that he didn't want to win?
No, that's a good one. No, it's called Fire and Fury, and it's from Michael Wolff inside the Trump White House. Now, here's what he puts in the beginning. This is Mr. Wolff puts in the beginning of the book. A number of his sources, he says, were definitely lying to him. Well, some offered accounts that flatly contradict those of others. But they were nonetheless included in the vivid account of the West Wing's workings in a process Wolf describes as, quote, allowing the reader to judge, unquote, whether they are true.
I have written an entire piece of fiction. I will let you sift what might be true from what is clearly a lie.
Because I can't figure it out myself. I don't know what's true, what isn't. They literally are lying to me, but I'm still putting it out as a book and acting as though it's something truthful.
Sort of like the dossier, right?
Well, we'll get
to
that in a
second.
Listen,
we haven't verified any of this stuff, but you know what? We're just going to throw it out there and see what you think.
Yeah, so this book it's been panned. The day after it was released, it was panned, even by liberals, because they couldn't believe anything they heard. What's true and what isn't? Why would Donald Trump ever give access to this lunatic to let him.
Well,
write
you should
garbage.
Back up. You should back up because maybe there's some people that haven't been following this. Because most of America doesn't care about Michael Wolff.
They don't even know who he is.
This is supposedly the tell-all book by Steve Bannon.
Yes.
Okay. So the reason that the press is all agog and a Twitter about this is because they love this sort of palace intrigue, right? Now, there are so many things that are great about this. Number one, if you recall, Steve Bannon was fired from the administration, how many months ago, Chad? Seven?
Six months ago. All right. It's been a while.
So he's been gone. He's been completely out of the picture. Mm-hmm. He's apparently now incredibly bitter and angry at Donald Trump. And so, you know, he's firing things at Donald Trump. Donald Trump issued a statement about how Steve Bannon is an idiot and he's lost his mind. But here's the thing. Steve Bannon, according to the left, according to the press, was the epitome of evil. He was the alt-right supremacist. He was sort of Rasputin, right? He was kind of even worse than Dick Cheney, apparently.
A lot worse, which is hard to do. Yeah.
Because on the scale of enemies, the scale of villains to the left, Dick Cheney was way up there. But now, suddenly, because he's written this polemic, right, this fictional book panning Donald Trump, now we're citing Steve Bannon as if he's some kind of authority, right?
Because he makes no sense for that.
That's the first thing. The second thing is that the notion that's in the book that they've been constantly talking about is Donald Trump didn't really want to win the election, okay?
He only ran. He didn't want to win, right?
Right, but here's the best part of this. So wait, I'm trying to figure this out, Chad. You help me.
Uh-huh.
So Donald Trump committed treason and colluded with Russia in an effort to win the election, but he didn't really want to win the election.
Is the assumption that he wanted to get caught for the treason
prior
to the election so that he could not win?
We're having a fork in the road here in our narratives.
Which is it? Which is it, folks?
The man has engaged in the most massive conspiracy in the history of politics for 5 years before he was even a candidate as a sleeper agent for Vladimir Putin just so he could become president, or he didn't even really want to win.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. None whatsoever. There's nothing in this that's hard-hitting.
And the best.
Nothing.
Wait, the absolute best part is Hillary Clinton lost to a buffoon who didn't even want to win.
He didn't try. He didn't want to win. And somehow
perhaps
she still lost.
That's why their house was on fire the other day in Chappaqua.
I heard it was from a ceiling fan.
Okay.
What I think it was probably self-inflicted. Yes. So the book is a joke. You don't need to read it because it's just the gossip. It's a gossip rag.
It is.
It
also demonstrates this echo chamber thing because I asked a couple of my friends who were liberals who were all excited and I said, tell me why this is significant in any way.
What's it do?
I mean, I understand that you are interested in this because everything that Trump does drives you batty and you love hearing somebody attack Trump, but why is this a new somebody wrote a book? Okay, an unsourced book about the same way they've written books about Hillary, and he's angry at Donald Trump, doesn't like Donald Trump, somebody who has been fired from his campaign, from his administration for 6 or 7 months. Why is this more than a 1 or 2 day news story? We know why. Why, Chad?
It's because it makes him look bad.
Well, it's also because anything involves Donald Trump, these people have completely lost their mind.
This is National Enquirer level stuff. This is not hard hitting inside the White House, all the presidents met. This is a disgruntled former employee putting out gossip. That's it.
The media, he is so inside the heads of the media. This is all they can think about.
Oh, I know.
One of my favorite things that I saw, I'm not on Twitter, but you know, I sometimes see them in articles. Is that CNN apparently spent something like an entire week, maybe 18 or 19 or 20 different references. Do you remember this? There was apparently a white box truck that had parked somewhere and it was shielding Donald Trump while he was golfing, right?
Yes,
and so CNN is sending out a task force to get to the bottom of who were the people involved in the plot to prevent us from seeing. Meanwhile, we have the revolution going on in Iran.
Right, and
not a single story about this. But the white box truck, we must get to the bottom of who did this.
We hear about the box truck. We hear about how much golf he's played, how many times he's been to his personal properties. What does that have to – are you telling – seriously, just seriously, for anybody out there listening, do you believe that Donald Trump can only conduct presidential business at the White House?
Yes.
He can't do it anywhere else but at the White House.
Cannot.
So if he plays a round of golf, which is what, three and a half hours, if you're walking, it's probably four. Okay. And what's he doing the rest of the day? presidential business. He can't be doing anything on the golf course. He can't be making a phone call. He can't be talking to aides. This is insane that they're so caught up in this. Wasn't Obama playing an awful lot of it?
I think so. He also
didn't he go to Hawaii for every Christmas?
Martha's Vineyard and hanging with George Clooney.
I'm just a little confused.
And whoever the guy was, you know, the pimp with the limp or the gimp with the he's on the View. How many times was Obama on The View?
Oh, a bunch.
8, 9?
Was going to be on David Letterman's
How
new
could
show.
He possibly be conducting the nation's business, Chad?
It's insane that you think that the White House is a place. It's not where everything happens. Things happen around the world. This isn't 1920. Things can happen elsewhere. I'm just flabbergasted by this. So you kind of went in a little bit into the Russia thing again. I thought about this week. So let's say, for the sake of argument, Donald Trump colluded with Vladimir Putin. They agreed we're going to win the election, which he did.
Right.
So what was the collusion? What did Vladimir Putin give him to help him win? What did he get? What did Donald Trump get that helped him win this election?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's difficult. I got to put myself back into this fever dream state to understand this. But apparently, he didn't get anything other than, you know, Putin's hacker minions allowed him to win by, I'm not
Facebook
sure.
Facebook ads?
Yeah,
or what?
You know, well, that kind of breaks down there at that point. There's multiple problems with this. Yeah, I don't know. By the way, did you notice, also underreported, I think just the last couple of days, which I cheered, is the administration is now preparing to open essentially all of our offshore waters for oil exploration and drilling.
That's
now, question for you, Chad.
Yes.
Do you think that makes Vlad Putin happy or unhappy that we are doing that?
I believe most of Russia's wealth is in oil, so I'd think it unhappy.
Right. So the person that is the sock puppet for the Putin regime would probably, think, not be engaging in those policies.
Not likely.
Unless Vlad was asleep while this happened, the memo hasn't gotten back to him yet. Maybe we'll reverse course on that when Vlad tells him,
could be,
hey, listen, Donald, you don't understand, but see, we need money from oil, and if the U.S. becomes the world's foremost oil superpower, that's bad for the hammer and sickle, so can you please stop?
hammer and sickle. I don't think they still have a hammer and sickle.
Well, Vlad does. Vlad does.
I got a Soviet room in his back of his house. So just think about that. What could you possibly collude to get from Vlad Putin? I can't think of anything that he could give Donald Trump to win the election. You can run interference, but I think Hillary did enough of that on her own. I don't think he needed any help on that. You could get Facebook ads were purchased, but if you're getting your news from Facebook, you're an idiot.
But
okay?
This goes back to my other point is going into the election, given what we know about the Obama-Clinton foreign policy, and we've talked about this.
Yeah.
Crimea and Ukraine and the Russian reset, and I will have more flexibility after I'm elected.
Look at ISIS.
Right.
Look at ISIS was totally.
Why would Vlad Putin want anyone other than Hillary Clinton?
He could
do anything he wanted. Donald Trump, at a minimum, even though he said nice things, he was an unknown. So you've got the devil that you know who has allowed you to do anything that you want, right?
Yeah.
Not only that, propping up Iran.
Yep.
Okay, so doing nothing in Syria. You've got your puppet Bashar al-Assad in Syria. The foreign policy that we conducted for 8 years under the Obama administration and under the auspices of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State was a doormat for Vlad Putin.
Joke.
Why in the world would he not want Hillary Clinton to be president?
He would.
Because he's angry with her?
Well, every time I hear the media talk about it, I don't understand where's the connection with Donald Trump? There's no connection. There's nothing that makes sense to me other than
nice
you don't
things.
Like Donald Trump.
He said nice things about Vlad Putin on the campaign trail.
So did Hillary. So did Obama. I mean, they both said nice things about we're having a Russian reset. We can work together. What a load of crap. Yeah, I'm just tired of hearing this collusion because it doesn't make any sense. You say the word collusion, and it sounds ominous, but at the end of the day, nothing could have affected that. Nothing they did.
No.
They didn't beam,
well,
like I said, they didn't beam into your brain and make you vote a certain way at the election. So that didn't happen.
The other thing, if you've noticed, is that the collusion narrative is now really unraveling.
Well,
it's been a farce from the beginning. But one thing that you see now, and you've seen this in articles in the New York Times, is that they've now clearly realized, oh boy, the dossier is a problem.
It's a
problem on multiple fronts. Not only is it a joke, because it links in
so many.
It links in the FBI. You've got the DOJ. You got Peter Strzok. You got Bruce Orr and his wife. You got Fusion GPS. In fact, one of the most hilarious things I read recently is the two guys that head up Fusion GPS. It's Glenn Simpson and another guy, right? They write an editorial in the New York Times basically saying, listen, you need to believe us. You know, this was superb information that we had, and how dare Donald Trump attack us? The one interesting thing about this very lengthy piece of propaganda they were allowed to write for the New York Times is they didn't identify a single fact from their dossier that they actually corroborated.
They can't. Right?
So they're out there. The people that actually put this out in public, paid for by the DNC and Hillary Clinton, using unnamed Russian KGB high-ranking officials. We've been told those are bad people, right?
Right.
To take down Donald Trump.
They would never
Trump.
Tell you lies, right?
They then defend this because they know it's coming apart. But in their defense, now you would think if I'm defending this dossier and its reliability and its authenticity, I'd be giving you chapter and verse. For instance, we have confirmed X and Y and Z. They've confirmed nothing. The only thing that they confirmed is that Carter Page was at one point in time in Moscow. And what they've realized is if Carter Page is the reason that the dossier was used to get FISA warrants, that's a dead end. Mm. So we cannot have Carter Page as the reason that the FBI did this because everyone knows the Carter Page thread goes nowhere. So we now have to figure out another reason that the FBI got FISA warrants. And they're referring to
Papadopoulos.
Yeah, Papadopoulos.
Webster's dead.
Right, so they're now shifting off of, Carter Page, dead end, bad, go elsewhere. I really am interested to see the Inspector General's report drops, I think. Is it the end of this month or early February?
I don't expect anything from that. That's where inspections go to die.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I actually think there's going to be some stuff in there that's going to be problematic for Mueller and the Democrats. We'll see what happens.
But so you brought up the Papadopoulos and the Steele dossier. We talked about this before. The FISA court needs corroborating evidence to issue a warrant. It's an international court, and
it's not for domestic crimes.
Correct.
It is for counterintelligence against foreign nations.
So if the FBI, and it sure looks like Comey, took this dossier and used it as their own information and presented it to the FISA court. Now they're saying Papadopoulos shooting his mouth off, but what I've read is Papadopoulos was shooting his mouth off to somebody else and they overheard it. That's not really evidence. That's just somebody getting drunk and shooting off their mouth. If they use this dossier as their sole source of reason to the FISA court, does that mean Michael Flynn is justly prosecuted? Because
absolutely.
So it seems like they used false information put together by Hillary Clinton, I might add, to get a warrant that doesn't back up anything to go after Michael Flynn and Donald Trump. It seems really weak.
Put together by Hillary Clinton, paid for by the DNC and Hillary Clinton.
And the FBI.
With the FBI. The FBI still refuses to tell Congress whether they paid people for this. You have at least three different people that were involved in Mueller's team, either FBI side or DOJ, in Strzok, in his mistress, Lisa Page, in Bruce Orr, and his wife. Mm-hmm. Bruce Orr's high-ranking at DOJ. His wife is working for Fusion GPS at the time. Mm. Bruce Orr is meeting with Simpson at Fusion GPS. These are all the same people.
Right.
This is, in my view, again, we don't know all the facts. We got to wait if they ever come out.
Yeah.
But if anyone needs to talk about collusion and criminality, that's the direction that the probe needs to go in.
Well, you know, Mueller's not going to take it that direction.
Well, of course he's not.
But, you know, didn't Lindsey Graham come out this week and say there should be another special prosecutor to look at that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's another dangerous
and again,
to travel.
The very same people in Peter Strzok and James Comey who completely dropped the ball intentionally while investigating Hillary Clinton.
Well,
and we've talked at length about this.
We're talking back to the memo that came out this week that was corrected, where originally he had put down all the points for why she should be prosecuted, and it was changed later.
Who changed it?
Peter
Strzok.
Oh, Peter Strzok.
The man that is everywhere. The ubiquitous Peter Strzok is the one that changed gross negligence.
But that had to be with Cromie's agreement.
Absolutely.
Because he read it to Congress.
So the statute for felony level crimes relating to your not protecting confidential classified information says gross negligence. Now, remember, James Comey came out during his press conference after he spent 10 minutes laying out all the reasons that Hillary Clinton should be indicted and then said, well, we're not going to do that because there was no intent. The statute doesn't require intent. He invented that. But even worse, Peter Strzok, the guy that interviewed Flynn, the guy that was exchanging text messages with his mistress, Lisa Page, saying we must stop Donald Trump. They're having meetings in the assistant DOJ's office about this. He's the guy that changes gross negligence in the memo to extreme carelessness. Why is that significant? Because the statute refers to gross negligence as triggering a crime.
I mean, take a lesson, it doesn't matter.
You can't make this up.
Well, it is amazing. Is it not amazing that we're still talking about this? This has been a year or more, a year and a half of all this talk, and it all seems to be manufactured behind the scenes.
They are barreling into Paul Manafort's home with a SWAT team in the middle of the night with guns drawn. After he is set, and by the way, I think Paul Manafort's a sleazebag.
Yeah.
Okay. Paul Manafort may have his own problems in terms of being an unregistered foreign agent. That's why he was indicted.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
That's why he pled guilty. But look at the conduct as it relates to what they've been doing with Trump. And meanwhile, for Hillary Clinton, we don't convene a grand jury. We don't subpoena things.
Nothing.
We don't subpoena physical evidence. We give immunity deals to high-ranking witnesses for nothing.
Yep.
They don't even have to plead.
Then we destroy the evidence.
We allow Cheryl Mills, who's a lawyer, but at the time was Hillary Clinton's chief personnel officer, who was neck deep in deep sixing all of the computer files. We're going to allow you to invoke attorney-client privilege and take the Fifth. It is unreal.
I was so unnerved to realize how deeply this has been infested by these liberals. It's very political, and it shouldn't be. See, it makes me feel like the FBI is no longer what I thought the FBI was. They are no longer an independent arm. Of course, they're under the Department of Justice. I understand that. But
the leadership.
They're horrible.
The rank and file of the FBI, you know, they still do great work. These are brave people. They're very, very talented. They're dedicated. But it is very clear, and again, we've talked about this a lot, the lasting legacy of the Obama administration, there's many of them, is his complete perversion of all of the agencies of government for essentially to become extensions of the Democratic Party. The leadership of the FBI is incredibly compromised. The leadership of the DOJ is clearly compromised. People say, well,
I think the CIA probably
Robert Mueller is a lifelong Republican. He's a man above reproach. And you know what? He may very well be. But nobody that has allowed an investigation to be conducted in this fashion has any ability. There's not even a presumption that he is above board.
Well, they said the same about Comey. Boy Scout, does the right thing, always honest. Seems like Comey's just as big of a dirtbag as everybody else.
Yeah. They're all political operators. Mm-hmm. They all hate Donald Trump. And you know what? It's fine for you to hate Donald Trump.
I don't care if you hate Donald Trump.
But when it starts perverting your job, I mean, again, one of the other lawyers on his campaign or on his team of investigators is the guy who's texting Sally Yates, who was the then acting attorney general, who decides to defy Donald Trump's order to impose his immigration ban.
Back in January. Guess what, Sally?
You have two choices. You can receive backslaps and hashtags and thumbs up by resigning, or you can fulfill your obligation. So she does neither. You've got members of his team, one of the lead prosecutors, texting her saying, I am in awe. I'm in awe of your act of resistance. It is a hive of scum and villainy. That's what I say about the UN.
Yes.
That's what is becoming increasingly apparent about most of the people that have been involved in this case. And again, people will say, he removed Strzok. It took him 3 months, and they never explained why he was removed. They stonewalled on that for weeks.
Reassigned him.
Right. Oh, you're going to be reassigned to Ice Station Zebra or whatever. Mm-hmm. It stinks to high heaven, and they should be investigating this stuff. Whether that will ever happen, I don't know.
Well, we'll see. You brought up the den of thieves and villainy. I want to talk about Nikki Haley. She's our UN ambassador. She had some couple quotes this week, and I'll elaborate on. There's two parts here, and I want to play them both just for this. Okay, let's play the first one here.
I'll be blunt. When the American people see a group of countries whose total contributions to the Palestinian people is less than 1% of UNRWA's budget, when they see these countries accuse the United States of being insufficiently committed to peace, the American people lose their patience.
Let me play a second one before I comment.
Instead,
there is a larger point to make. The United States will remember this day in which it was singled out for attack in the General Assembly for the very act of exercising our right as a sovereign nation. We will remember it when we are called upon to once again make the world's largest contribution to the United Nations. And we will remember it when so many countries come calling on us, as they so often do, to pay even more and to use our influence for their benefit. America will put our embassy in Jerusalem. That is what the American people want us to do. And it is the right thing to do. No vote in the United Nations will make any difference on that. But this vote will make a difference on how Americans look at the UN and on how we look at countries who disrespect us in the UN. And this vote will be remembered. Thank you.
So Nikki Haley standing up for U.S. I like her a lot. I didn't know her before she on the national scene, but so she's talking about the vote, about putting our embassy in Jerusalem.
How dare we?
And the first quote was after they'd already voted, and she was just calling them out, and she went on for like 10 minutes, just, you're a bunch of jerks. I can't believe how stupid you are. And she's talking about how much money the United States gives to the UN. She talked about a committee in the first one.
I think we represent something like 40% of the UN's total operating budget.
Total operating in the when she's talking in the first clip about the UNSA, that's the
– UNRWA.
UNRWA, sorry. We contribute about 30% of that money, more than double the amount of the other next two countries combined. So basically, we're paying for the privilege. She talks about it in a different clip. We're paying for the privilege of you singling us out and telling us how awful we are as we give you money so you can exist in this body to tell us how awful we are. Maybe we shouldn't do that. So they took $285 million away from the Palestinian.
Listen, I've said for years, the UN, as I said, hive of scum and villainy. It is a bunch of thugs and kleptocrats and mostly anti-Semites and tin pot dictators. You go down the line, human rights violators, mm-hmm. corruptocrats. We should pull out completely.
Oh.
We should not be funding them.
Nope.
Go to Davos. Okay, go somewhere in the EU. Go to Belgium, whatever. Mm-hmm. Get someone else to be your sugar daddy, because the only reason that the UN exists right now, essentially, sure, they do some humanitarian stuff. You know what? We can do that on our own.
We do.
We don't need them. We do it anyway. And the rest of it is just to pass resolutions against Israel. That's essentially what the UN does. And then engage in things like the oil for food scandal and those sorts of other things to line the pockets of all of these incredibly corrupt tyrants. You have an organization that has countries like China on the Human Rights Council. It is a farce.
Yes.
And it, to me, we should not be dignifying that organization with any level of recognition or credibility. What we should say is, listen, when you guys can stop passing, every other resolution, essentially deciding that Israel should be wiped off of the map, declaring that any Jew that lives in Jerusalem is an international criminal, which, by the way, that was the resolution that the Obama administration abstained from voting on. Okay, one of the most disgraceful things that we've ever done that was a year ago. Right, these are the Barack Obama friend of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so Nikki Haley is finally someone that has come to the fever swamp and said, listen, we're not going to put up with this anymore. And by the way, you have absolutely no leverage whatsoever.
We don't care what
we
you say.
We are funding your nonsense.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe think long and hard about trying to get in line and do what the UN is supposed to do. Because if you don't, then maybe we're just going to pull the plug on the whole thing, and I would be applauding if we ever had the stones to do that.
I would love for her to work her way out of a job because there's no more UN.
Yeah. Well, no, they can continue on with the UN. The problem is it wouldn't continue on.
Not here. Without our money and without our
get out of
facilities.
Turtle Bay, you know, go wherever.
Go wherever.
Go to Morocco.
I was very happy to hear that. So the result of that was $285 million less going to the UN fund to help the Palestinians. Now, I personally didn't know any U.S. money was going to help fund the Palestinians, and I wasn't sure exactly why that was the case. There was in the clip I was showing there, Nikki's talking to the state of Palestine, which there is no state of Palestine.
Right. We've gone over
that. At the UN, the title says State of Palestine. It doesn't exist. Which is really kind of odd when you think about it, but there it was. The Egyptian ambassador had a stone face. I think he was either dead or comatose. The reality was, we give money to all these people, And Pakistan now comes up in this discussion.
Yeah.
Donald Trump came out this week about Pakistan, tweeted about them the day after Christmas and said, hey, guess what? We're tired of your lies. We're tired of you screwing with us. We're not giving you any more money. Deal with it. And they're calling it an active war or something?
Oh, maybe.
Because we're not going to give you money. That's
well, every
war.
Tweet that he sends out is an act of war. You know, he's going to...
That's
like,
North Korea
I
says.
Said he's like Marvin the Martian. He's going
to
blow up the Earth.
So how do you feel about that? Do you feel about... Should we give money to Pakistan anymore?
No.
I think they double-crossed us as many times as they possibly can. Sometimes they say they're working with us, sometimes they aren't, but they always want our money.
Again, I'm not one of these absolutists that says, oh, well, you know, you simply can't do business with people that are bad people because otherwise you have no foreign policy whatsoever. We have to deal with a lot of bad
sure.
actors.
Do we have to give them money, though?
No, I don't think so. I think that's part of this sort of subsidizing people that basically hate us has gone on long enough.
Yeah. I look at my taxes and I think, I'm taking money out of my pocket so you can come here and try to kill me? Right. That doesn't make any sense. I'm confused how this works. I know there's foreign policy and you got to pay to play sometimes, but it just seems like we're giving an awful lot of money to people who really hate us over the world.
We sent pallets of cash to the mullahs.
They want more,
right?
But it's not seeming to help them, is it?
And by the way, where's the press been? The press is, of course, beside themselves about Michael Wolff's book and Donald Trump eating 3 scoops of ice cream and whatever else and the truck that's blocking his golfing. Meanwhile, this is now the next wave of the Green Revolution in Iran. Yeah. Have you seen much of this at all?
Fox News is a little bit. I've read about it, but I haven't seen any of the major.
Almost nothing.
They don't talk about
it. But of course, these are the people that care about the marginalized and the oppressed. But except for those people, because see, you're going to mess up Obama's legacy. We're going to bring the mullahs into the international community.
They don't want to be.
They're using
community.
That cash to build children's hospitals, Chad.
Sure, they are. Children's hospitals on the front, but they're actually nuclear processing plants in the back.
Oh,
it boggles the mind that this stuff exists, and I'm floored that this is happening. But here we are. This is what we're dealing with, and I have to applaud Donald Trump for standing up and saying we're not doing this anymore. We're done. Nikki Haley, we're not doing this. We're going to remember this day when you all ganged up on us as we're paying for the privilege. No, thank you. We're done. That'd be a happy day
for
me.
I have said from the beginning, when you separate Donald Trump's policies from the way that he behaves, and for most people that hate him, they can't do that.
Correct.
So his policies become irrelevant because anything that he does, it was done by Donald Trump. Therefore, we must hate it and oppose it because he's Orange Hitler. I understand. But when you actually separate his – and by the way, tell me – I like to do this. Tell me the 3 most outrageous things in terms of personal behavior, okay, that you can think of that Donald Trump has done in his first year in office. So we're not talking
in
about
office, not
in
before.
Office. We're not going to talk about the campaign and talking about McCain. Oh, he did a lot of idiotic things.
Sure.
Give me the 3, the David Letterman top 3 most insane, outrageous, stunningly, galactically horrible things that he has done.
Outside of his normal behavior or just...
Well, no, just think of them. Tell me what they are.
Just his Twitter. Just his Twitter stuff.
Okay, exactly.
That's all I can think of.
He keeps sending out tweets that make people very, very upset.
I can't really think of anything in the last year that he's done that's outrageous other than his tweets. And I think they're meant to mess with the heads of the opposition, really. I think they're psychological. I mean, you can call North Korea horrible, and they are. I mean, it's factual. Pakistan has lied to us.
But this is my point, is that when you evaluate his presidency from a policy standpoint after the first year, when you look at what he has done, the initiatives he is pursuing, I couldn't really be happier.
No,
I mean, now, I don't agree with him on free trade because he's not a free trader.
No.
He's always been a protectionist. He believes in tariffs. That's stupid. But
that's
when you look
century.
At when you look at his judges, when you look at his economic policy, stripping away all of these unnecessary regulations, this tax bill, we've talked about it, not perfect, but from a conservative standpoint, far, far better than what we had. Far, far better.
Are you comfortable with the tax plan put in place?
Am I comfortable? Are there things that I would have liked to have seen additionally?
Yes.
But if you're asking me by and
you
large,
feel it's
is
better
it good?
Than what it was?
Absolutely.
Okay.
By a long shot.
Sure.
So you look at all of this, even with foreign policy, what you know his approach that he's taken. Again, We had a lot of happy talk about putting the embassy in Jerusalem for many years in both Democratic and Republican administrations. Now, we haven't done it yet, but this is the first guy that's basically said, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know what, mullahs? I'm not sure we're going to abide by your ridiculous agreement that my predecessor put in place because he wanted some legacy in the Mideast, because you're terrorist and you hate us, and we're not going to abide by it because you're violating it and laughing at us through your beards.
Yeah.
So, as a conservative observer of Donald Trump, I think that you need to recognize, you got to give the guy at least a B or a B plus in terms of his policy.
If you're conservative and you can take away the name
Donald
Trump
from it. If you're
Trump
progressive, you should hate it because you're not a conservative and you don't like any of this
stuff.
And they do.
But you're right. You have to take the name off of it. If it's anybody else doing this, are you upset? And if you can say honestly, if you called it John Smith doing this and you're still upset, then maybe you're not a conservative. But if you can take away that name and say, I like what I see, I don't like who does it, but I like what I see, then you can't ask for more than that, really, at this point.
And you should be able to hold these two views simultaneously in your mind, which is, I really wish Donald Trump's character was much better because he isn't somebody of good character. And I really wish that he would stop tweeting, although I absolutely understand. At this point, anyone who thinks that he's doing this recklessly, he does this intentionally because he sees that every time he does it, the Pavlov's dogs come running when the bell rings and they lose their minds and he's going to keep doing it. Is it statesmanlike? No. Is he juvenile in many ways? Yes. Can he be petty? Yes. Is he a man of low character in many ways? Absolutely. Does he lie? Yes. All of that stuff, it's baked in the cake. He's now the president. So I can say that particular tweet I didn't like, although I think the stuff about Kim Jong-un is ridiculous. I mean, who cares? Who cares? My button's bigger. Oh, my word. The world is going to blow up tomorrow. I mean, just stop. Stop
with the
hysteria.
I heard Kim Jong got a bigger button for Christmas.
Yeah, just stop with the hysteria.
I know.
The same thing when Reagan was president. Reagan's going to blow up the earth, right?
I know.
With his Illudium Pew-36 space modulator. Just stop. Nobody's listening to you people anymore, okay?
Marvin the Martian, wow.
Yes. So dug it in there. I have people say to me, how can you support Donald Trump? Well, are you asking me how I can support this particular policy? I can very easily explain that because it's exactly what I think he should be doing.
Yes.
And when he implements a policy that I don't like,
I will
say that's a really, really bad policy. I don't agree with some of his economic policy because it's dopey. You know, protectionism doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And before anybody says net neutrality, you don't know what you're talking about. Stop talking. I know Tony's not going to talk on that
it's
one.
It's too boring. It'll make your eyes glaze over. Here's the key with net neutrality is Congress needs to do it.
Congress needs
agencies
to do it.
Agencies don't get to
correct.
Have a little feudal kingdom
that's
where they do
correct.
Outside of their congressional mandate to do whatever they want to protect the people. It doesn't work that way. That's the way Elizabeth Warren wants the world to work.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like Elizabeth Warren.
Mm-mm.
So if you really think that net neutrality is the awesomest thing ever, even though you have no clue what it is and couldn't explain it in 30 seconds or write it down on a note card, what you need to do is have your Congress critters go ahead and expand the ability of the FCC to do that.
Well, all that happened this week or last week was FCC reclassified it. Net neutrality is non-existent. They reclassified it to go to the FTC. That's it. That's all it was.
Well, and the other thing is,
which is what it was before.
I remember the people wailing in the streets in the darkness in 2014 before net neutrality existed.
Yeah.
It was a state of terror, chaos,
yes.
Lord of the Flies. And then once net neutrality came, the sun came out and there were posies in the fields. And so, you know, all the people that are losing their minds that don't understand even what this is about need to explain, well, why was it okay before this even happened? Yeah. So we're not going to talk about that. It's too boring.
Well, I'll give you one solution for net neutrality. I do want to say this. You fix net neutrality by opening up competition for ISPs. If you open up ISP competition, because I have one ISP I can go to get high-speed internet, you make it available to other ISPs to come in and compete, you will have net neutrality. Boom. Done.
By the way, you have protesters outside of Ajit Pai's home threatening him with death threats, threatening his family. This is the left. And
it's insane.
These people couldn't explain what net neutrality is.
Not in
you know,
the best
if they
day of
phoned
their life.
77 friends, they still couldn't do it.
Not in the best day of their life. Let's move on. Tony has been hinting about his ability to tell you how to drive. I want to hear it from the man himself. I have a question for him when we get to it. What's your rules on driving?
Well, I've already gone through. I mean, again, the rule that governs all other rules, and if you follow this rule, All other things fall into place. We talked about this. I ranted about this a couple, whatever, weeks ago, is get out of the left lane. Get out of the left lane.
What do you do on a two-lane road? Double line. Somebody's actually going the speed limit. Speed limit's 45.
Well,
you want to go faster. What do you do?
Well, if it's a legal passing lane, I go around them.
What if it's double yellow?
Double yellow, if I can see, I go around them.
You go around them anyway?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. No question. In a millisecond.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, again, you don't do things that are reckless. If I can't see oncoming traffic, but as you know, there are many, many roads with double yellow where you can see for 500 yards. And my car happens to be able to go around people very quickly.
I can attest to
that. If you're driving an Amish buggy or something that is powered by a hamster wheel, you got to be careful, right?
That's true.
I don't
need to
worry about
that. You get a Prius, they'll pull out if you can't see. I just ask because I know there's a lot of back roads. Not everything's a highway, and there's times you have to travel. And sometimes the speed limit is 45, 50, 70, whatever. You got to go. Some people are going to go the speed limit. I just wondered what you were going to do.
Yeah, and most of the time, here's the thing. If they're going the speed limit on most roads, they're usually going a little under the speed limit. And most traffic is flowing about 10 miles an hour over the speed limit.
On a highway, yes.
Even on some of these back roads.
Some.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, come on. Like, most of these roads that are marked at 45, again, I'm talking about one lane in each direction, state highway, okay, not an interstate.
Right.
I would say the average traffic speed, if you set up a monitor on most of those roads, is about 8 to 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. That's sort of what everyone recognizes as the reasonable pace of vehicular movement. So when someone is pegged at the speed limit, they're actually going 10 miles an hour slower than they should be for what the average traffic flow is.
So you'd hate me then.
Oh, I would just go around you. I wouldn't hate you at all.
Well,
you, I wouldn't
even
think about
you. This happened this week. Two people were behind me on a state road like that. And this is a road that the speed limit changes every mile or so. Goes up, goes down constantly. I don't know why, but it just constantly changes. And there's sections where cops sit. And I travel this road enough that I know where the cops sit. So I try to go the speed limit. My job requires me to have a license.
Right.
So these people were weaving back and forth. Looked like they were kind of trying to rear end me. And they both went around me and both of them flipped me off. Because I was going the speed limit. Now, they went around double yellows, and I'm like, well, just go around. If you don't like it, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be.
I wouldn't be mad at you.
They were, because I was holding them up from somewhere.
Almost inevitably, 9 out of 10 people that are sticking to the speed limit, when we have any sort of curve or undulation in the road, they're dropping to like 12 miles an hour. You know, the curve.
I don't do that.
No, they're slowing down like they're piloting a super tanker.
No,
you know?
I don't do
we're
that.
Now going 22 in the 35 mile an hour curve, right? Because that's sort of their mode. Here's the other thing. If you are pressing on your brakes.
Yeah.
Repeatedly,
yeah.
For no apparent reason, you shouldn't be driving.
Agreed.
And I see this all the time.
You do.
I'm following people on a road. It's a 45 mile per hour road. There's not even a curb. People are stepping on their brakes. Their brake lights are going on. Another 3 seconds. Their brake lights. What are you doing?
They're afraid to drive.
What are you doing?
I will agree with you on the speed being above the limit. Like if it's 25, I can see people going 35, sometimes even 40. But I don't know if I agree on 55 on a two lane road, people are going 70. I don't know if I agree with that.
Even
not a normal regulation.
If you're on the highway, even, and you are flowing with traffic in the left lane, if you have to be constantly stepping on your brake, then you don't understand how to modulate the throttle of your vehicle.
Shouldn't be
because you should be able to almost never touch your brakes. Now, of course, if traffic comes to a stop, you've got to slow down. If there's a sudden stop in front of you, you have to slow down. But I constantly see people moving at, let's say, 3-car length distance in the left lane at 75, and we're hitting our brake, and we're hitting our brake, and we're hitting. What are you doing?
Why are you out here?
You need to be off the road. You need to be taking a bike. You need to be taking Uber. You shouldn't be driving. At a minimum, you need to do that in the right lane so that all the other people that drive like that, you can all congregate together and get where you're going 7 hours late. I don't care.
7 hours. Okay. All right. So you've heard it here, folks. I'm not somebody Tony wants to be behind, but he'll pass me.
But yeah, I wouldn't give you a second thought. I would say, this person's going too slowly. I can see. Goodbye.
I have no problem with that. Just don't flip me off on the way around. If I'm going
right,
speed limit.
So in other words, you wouldn't be the person that was insistent upon going 45. And then the minute – I've had people do this to me. When I start to pass them, even in a legal passing lane, they will speed up to try to – basically try to kill me.
Yeah.
I'm going to prevent you from getting back into the safe lane of travel.
No. Now, if the speed limit changes at that spot, then I will speed up to
– Well, sure.
Accelerate to that speed limit. But I will not – no, I don't try to keep you from getting in. I'm not – I don't care if you want to get
ahead
of me, go ahead of me.
It's funny you bring this up. There's a quick 2-minute story.
Sure.
We had a dual sleepover right after Christmas. So our daughter went to her cousin's house and – or wrong. their daughter came here. My boys went up there to my sister's place. And so we had a Midway meeting, actually at the Midway Diner, which is, if you know around here, it's on Route 81 or whatever. So I'm coming back with all my kids because Anna, my daughter, went up. And so we're driving back, perfectly normal drive. I'm not even really going fast. I don't go that fast with the kids in the car. So I'm probably going 75 miles an hour on 81, maybe 80. And so we're
it's 65,
so we're going across. You, Chad knows where this is. We're going across a bridge that goes over the Susquehanna River, which is right in Harrisburg. It is three lanes. And by the way, this is I'm trying to remember what day it is, but there's no traffic. I mean, it's incredibly sparse because it's still the holiday weekend. So I'm in the middle lane because I always try to be in the middle lane because, of course, you have more options. You know, if you have pinhead in the right lane, you go the other way.
Like that.
There's a group of cars that are probably going 70. I don't know. I'm not even paying attention. The left lane. I go past them without event, nothing, slide into the left lane. I then look in my rearview mirror and I notice that there is a woman that I'll describe as maybe 25 years old. She's wearing a beret, who is completely apoplectic, who is flying up on my rear bumper. And she has a look on her face as if she wants to murder me. And so I'm kind of looking in my rearview mirror and I actually start laughing. And I said to the kids, I'm like, yeah, there's some lady that's in a Subaru, by the way, which makes sense.
Yes, of course.
So she gets, she's now on my bumper. Okay, now this is a woman I didn't.
Did you pass her?
She must have been in the front of the lane of cars in the left lane, and I'm in the middle lane. I didn't cut over in front of her. I literally drove past him at like 80 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Easy blinker, got over. I'm like a football field ahead of this woman.
She's chasing you down.
And she decides, apparently, that I have violated her personal dignity or something.
Wow.
So it then turns into her trying to get around me. And so now, of course, my car is much faster than her car. So I decided just to have some fun with her. So I refused to let her get around us.
Nice.
So she eventually goes onto the shoulder of the road. I can watch her. She pulls up alongside my car because traffic had slowed. And she has her window rolled down, her driver's side window, and she is sticking her head out the window. Now, I notice as
she's still driving.
Still driving at like 75 miles an hour.
Nice.
Screaming obscenities, okay?
Wow.
I did notice she has a nose ring. And so she definitely fit a certain profile.
Sure.
But I'm looking over at her, and that didn't help because I made like cut my ear like, can't hear what you're saying. And I'm actually laughing, but I think it scared the kids a little bit because they're kind of like, Dad, what is wrong with that woman?
Waiting for General Hux.
I said, I don't know what's wrong with her. And so when people do that, then you don't know how crazy they are.
Sure.
She also started to like mock swerve into my lane. And so I then just immediately like gunned it and left her in the dust. And of course, I got home, and Tara's reaction was, you must have done something.
It's always your fault, right?
It is. I said, I even told the kids, I said, did Daddy do anything to provoke Crazy Woman? And they're like, no, he didn't do what he didn't do what he usually does.
He do what he normally
does. He didn't do it. It was amazing. But she was beyond,
happy.
She was ready to murder me.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if I want to ride.
Apparently,
with you.
I shouldn't have passed people
who
in
were
the
going
middle
slower
lane.
Than you.
Yeah.
Apparently,
you shouldn't
going slower
do that.
Than you. Wow.
She was going fast enough. I should have stayed behind her.
Well, yes. Obviously, she'd go faster because she caught up
but
to you.
Again, if she had been abiding by my first commandment, which is if you're not going as fast as the middle lane, get out of the left lane.
Yeah.
But she didn't get out of the left lane. And the thing is, I wasn't even behind her. That's the thing. Sometimes people get annoyed if you're behind them and then you swing out to go. I was in my own lane, just cruising along.
You never left the lane.
Nope. Never did.
Wow. Yep. It takes all kinds, folks. Let's play this clip. This call-in. So let me play this.
Hey, Chad and Tony. This is Brad. I've been listening to the show the last 5 or 6 months. Always enjoyed
poor Brad.
Discussions and insights. Hey, I got a question for you two that part sports, part legal, part speculation.
Wow.
But I read an article recently in the Washington Post on Larry Johnson that is
CTE.
Essentially claiming that he's living with CTE. And in light of folks like Junior Seau and Aaron Hernandez and erratic behavior and the fact that really they can only diagnose this posthumously if you have the CTE diagnosis, I'm wondering what your thoughts are about when we may hear the first court case defense that CTE played a role in a crime with a living person, similar to the first court case where the insanity defense was successfully pled and carried out. So love to hear your thoughts. Like the show and wish you the best of luck. Thanks, guys.
That's a good question.
It's a very good question. And if you're not familiar, CTE is the thing that all the concussions.
Chronic
stuff,
traumatic encephalopathy.
Yeah, and it can only be diagnosed after you analyze the brain at death. Larry Johnson played for the Kansas City Chiefs for like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, was actually for about 2 or 3 years a really, really good running
correct,
back. One of the best running backs in the league.
Not a good person necessarily.
Yeah.
He had some off-field issues, but.
Also a very bruising, powerful runner, a guy that took a lot of contact.
A la Earl Campbell kind of hitting everybody. So he's claimed that he thinks he had CTE in high school. Now, again, you can't diagnose it till you're dead, at least not at this point. So Brad's question is, can somebody use this as a defense? Could Aaron Hernandez have used CTE as a defense for killing somebody?
Well, I think first of all, you're already seeing this. In other words, I was reading a lot of things even during the Hernandez trial, now not as a formal defense in that case, where people were already wanting to speculate that we can explain his behavior because he might have CTE. And in fact, because here's the thing, there is, as always, an inevitable ideological component to this stuff. So the doctor, the guy that is sort of given credit for first defining this, diagnosing this disease, he's already made statements. For instance, he made a statement in an interview, because he clearly does not really like the NFL in terms of
correct.
Because he's a doctor and he believes that it's dangerous. People shouldn't be engaging in behavior that damages their brains. But I saw him in an interview, and I forget what his name is.
He claimed,
as a physician, okay, as an expert, that O.J. Simpson's behavior, okay, O.J. Simpson murdered his wife and Ron Goldman, was clearly due to CTE. Now, that is an absurd thing for him to have said on multiple levels, because as Brad noted, no one can diagnose CTE until after death.
Right.
So for him, from a behavioral standpoint, to say, oh, it's clear to me, in looking at O.J. Simpson, clearly CTE, I think we will see a continuing trend for people to use this as an all-purpose excuse, even while they're alive, not even for crimes, you know?
Right.
The reason that I ran over those kids at the flag football game like Lawrence Phillips is because I had CTE, right? That's obviously what's going on. I think, now, I don't want to get too into the weeds of this on the legal side. There's a problem from an expert testimony standpoint, because in order for an expert to actually say that in court, experts have to testify to a reasonable degree of medical certainty in their field. So if you would put this guy on the stand, he has to author a report. Right now, there's no way for anyone to write a report that says that, that in my view, would not be thrown out of court even before you got to trial, because it's junk science. Mm-hmm. Meaning, the state of medicine right now is we can't diagnose this until they're dead. If we have a living defendant and we have a doctor purporting to say, I have the ability to determine that this person has CTE, I'm going to file a motion that says that doctor can't even get on the stand with this opinion, because the weight of medical science within the medical community, he's peddling nonsense. He's like the guy that's saying my shark cartilage is going to cure your cancer, right?
Yeah.
So that right now is the problem, but it's always incremental. Mm-hmm. And if you get enough, let's say enough doctors, enough sort of inertia here where you get a number of people within certain established medical communities to say, well, you know what? We've come up with, let's say, five behavioral markers that we believe consistently demonstrate someone that is CTE. I think within the space of 5 years, someone is going to try to have an expert say that in court. No question.
You're possibly right. It's Dr. Bennett Omalu, who's the doctor from the concussion movie originally based out of Pittsburgh. I would agree with you, and I think to say you had markers of changed behavior, you'd have to have a baseline that showed they didn't exhibit that behavior prior to whatever we're talking about. And I think until there's an actual physical test that a doctor can do on a live subject, you really can't do anything. You can get markers all you want, and you're getting into psychiatry at that point, but that's not a fixed point either.
But and remember, too, and again, this is sort of in the weeds with trial advocacy, is that the goal for people that want to use this is to simply have a judge say, you know what? It sounds a little sketchy, but I'm going to allow the opinion. And then it just becomes a battle of experts. Okay, right now, it's as a matter of law, this is not this is junk science. Okay, there's in the federal courts called a Daubert test. The state courts in Pennsylvania, it's called a Frye test, where you can file a motion that says, exclude this evidence. It's unreliable. It's unscientific. A jury shouldn't hear it. If somebody gets a judge to say, I'm at least going to let this guy tell a jury his theory, then it's just, whose expert do you believe? Do you believe the guy that says he had the six markers? Or you do believe the other guy that says, well, this is baloney. No one can diagnose this. But now you're over that initial hurdle of we've got it in front of a fact finder, and then who knows what they're going to do with it.
Yeah, anything can happen at that point. So good question, Brad. I think Tony would agree that you think it could happen in the near future if they get enough chances to put it out there. So we'll have to see. I don't know if Larry Johnson knows. If I think Larry Johnson was not a great guy before all this, so I'm not sure.
Well, and my larger view is that there's a lot of people who have conveniently discovered that they had CTE while they were doing all sorts of not good things.
Yes, yes. I would agree. I don't think hitting your head in football is the ideal situation for mental health. I don't think long-term mental health could be a great, or boxing for that matter.
Yeah.
Probably not great for your mental health. So let's finish real quick on two things. One, I believe the Rams had a better record than the Chargers.
Right. So we're going to go to Long John Silver's at a date of your choosing.
I don't believe they have surf. They have surf, but no turf at that. That's fine. So just so you say it again. I was
Chad
right.
Chad was correct.
Okay.
So Chad inexplicably, against the weight of all logic and rationality, was correct.
I think I don't know if anybody else picked that heard at all from anywhere.
You know what? If you had actually placed a Vegas bet on that,
I wasn't willing to bet on that.
You would have done quite well for yourself.
Okay, so the second thing was we talked about college football.
Yep.
And for some reason you doubted me and you went the other way.
Yep.
And it feels like, you know, I said Baker Mayfield to the Browns, and I think that would be a step up for Baker Mayfield. I don't know. Maybe because he was sick last week.
Well, I thought he played pretty well. You think he didn't play well?
Went to double overtime, I guess. I don't know.
Well, the thing about the Oklahoma game was that they actually – what I don't understand is when they went into those two overtimes, Mike Riley took the keys away from Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
You have the bet, you have the Heisman Trophy winner, the most dynamic player on the field. You've ridden him to this far, and you're going to turtle up and turn into – you know, we're going to run the ball a couple of times. We're going to kick field goals. I thought that they – became incredibly concerned. I mean, in the first half, they're throwing touchdown passes to Baker Mayfield, right?
I know.
And then in the overtimes, when you have the opportunity after Georgia kicks an initial field goal to end the game, you're just kind of playing for a field goal. I thought the play calling did a huge disservice to him in that game. But I also have to say that watching the whole game, I think Georgia was the better team.
I
mean,
so
Oklahoma
too.
Came out of the gates, and I don't think Georgia initially, they were kind of push back on their heels, because Oklahoma's offense is really good.
Yes.
But I think once Georgia's athletes kind of dialed in a little bit, I think if that game had continued just for another 3-4 quarters of regular football, I think Georgia pulls away.
I agree with that. And I think Oklahoma did a fine job, but I think at the end of the day, I don't think they were, you know, they were national champions. There was no chance they were going to be national. I don't think they would have beaten Alabama coming through that.
Well, now this is the interesting – all right, so you brought that up. And, of course, I also thought that Clemson would win, and boy, was that wrong, because Alabama completely annihilated – I mean, that game was 24-6. It might as well have been 50-6. Clemson's offense could do nothing.
Yeah.
And you got to give credit to Nick Saban and that defense. They actually – first of all, I think the long layoff helped them.
Sure.
Their defense – because, you know, they were giving up huge yardage totals late in the season.
Yep.
People were going up and down the field on them.
They were.
And they looked again now like an Alabama defense. Now, the question is, you said, I don't think Oklahoma could beat them, and you're probably right. However, the quarterbacks that Alabama have struggled with, and by the way, when I say struggled, I think Nick Saban has lost basically three games in the last like 12 years. Who are the quarterbacks, Chad,
Sean
that
Watson.
He's lost to? Johnny Manziel.
Yep.
Deshaun Watson, and he lost – who's the other – there's another one.
Cam Newton, wasn't he?
Yes.
Cam Newton.
So they lose their defense eats alive most pocket passers.
Yeah. Now, if they have a mobile quarterback, it tends to struggle
more. Well, because
more.
Why? Because when plays break down, eventually your defense is now out of position.
Right.
And if you've got a guy like Baker Mayfield or Johnny Manziel or Deshaun Watson who can run around for 6 seconds and then on a broken play find somebody, that's who they've struggled with.
Sure.
I'm a little scared for Fromm. Okay. Yeah. First of all, that's a true freshman quarterback
I know.
The field playing for the national championship. He's an impressive guy.
Yeah.
I just don't think you can beat. And by the way, Georgia's two running backs are awesome.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Chubb is awesome. And who's the other guy? Michael or Michelle? I can't know how you say his name. Michelle.
Yeah.
It's M I C H E L. Michael, whatever. They're both really good, but you cannot beat Alabama running the ball. You just can't.
You got to throw.
I don't think. Has anyone ever beaten a Nick Saban team by running the ball down their throat?
Not at Alabama. At Michigan State, yes. At Alabama, no.
Right, that's my point. At Alabama, they have never been beaten by a team that's dominated by an inexperienced pocket passer with two really good running backs. I don't think you can do it.
No, you're going to have to throw the ball because they'll stack the box, and there's no way you're going to. I don't care how good your running backs are. They're not going to get enough room to run.
Georgia athletically can match up with Alabama.
Oh, sure.
The problem is, the style of, I think Georgia's going to need multiple turnovers. They're going to need some trick plays. They're going to need some big plays, you know, that they're going to have to pull out of their bag of tricks because
they could do.
They could.
Yeah.
They're a very good team, but I think Alabama wins.
Well, and it's the master versus the teacher, or the student versus the master.
Right. And isn't he undefeated against every one of the assistants that he has ever faced? I think that is an accurate non-fake news.
Yeah, fake news. I it's going to be an interesting game, and it could be fun to watch. It could be boring to watch. It could be all defense, which isn't always the most exciting game to watch. But it should be interesting Monday night to
Georgia's
find out.
Georgia's quarterback's going to have to play the game of his life for them to win.
And he may.
He might.
There's a reason he's a starting quarterback in the SEC. So he's a true freshman. Last thing, UCF, University of Central Florida, this week came out and said, we beat Auburn, and Auburn
and
beat
Alabama.
And didn't
they say, we're the national champs?
And they gave the coaches national championship bonuses.
How ridiculous.
Even though Frost is going to Nebraska, they gave him a bonus after he's leaving. I don't know. It's just interesting.
It's
the transitive property, we beat Auburn, and Auburn beat both of the teams in the national championship game. So
it's just incredible. I mean, these are adults. Like, what?
The 13-0. 13-0. I don't know what you want me to tell you.
We're having our own national championship.
Kirby Smart thought it was good for him. He said, I'd do the same thing. Nick Saban said, that's nice, but it doesn't mean anything to me.
Well, it's just, I'm just sort of kind of stupefied by that.
Like, it's having fun. Nobody takes, I don't think, they can put we're national champions
up all they want.
It doesn't mean, truthfully, the national championship is mythical to begin
with. Well, they might as well just said they're solar system champions. It's just not national.
We're galaxy champions.
We're galaxy champions. There's no one else.
Nobody
we're unbeaten.
Else plays it.
No one else plays. We're galactic football champions.
We'll see. Who are you picking Monday night?
What? I just said.
You're picking Alabama?
Alabama.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alabama by at least 10.
Football, NFL football.
Which means, by the way, and it makes me happy, that means Alabama's going to lose, and I will be very pleased by that.
Because it means I will be lost. We'll see. I've been doing pretty good this year, so I'm going to go with me.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick me on this.
Oh, and before we go, one last thing. Will you or will you not watch the AFC Championship game if the Steelers are playing in it?
So, since we've last spoken, I've watched one game.
Oh, you've already
Well, I've watched them all. I watched the Patriots Steelers game.
Well, but
disappointingly,
so
I might add.
That answers my question.
But I didn't watch last week. I watched.
But it doesn't matter. Well, now that you've broken
the seal.
Your vow on a stupid regular season game, of course you're going to watch
stupid
it.
Stupid regular season. That was a big game.
Yeah.
But that's the one I watched.
And very disappointing. I thought you would at least last to the AFC Championship game.
Well, I don't know. I haven't watched any of the playoffs today. I don't know if I'll watch any tomorrow. I don't know. It depends on who the Steelers, where they end up. I will say this. If the Steelers are in the Super Bowl, I probably will watch.
Yes.
For sure.
You would have to.
I can't help myself. So that's all I got. Anything else from you?
No, we have done more than enough for our return engagement.
All right. Thank you, folks. We'll talk to you next time. I'm Chad.
I'm Tony.
Good night.
This has been a Hannah Tree production.